welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring the insightful reviews of Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. This week we review The King's Speech and Love and Other Drugs. And now, here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Film.
And I'm Mr. Movie.
As you probably can tell, Mr. Movie is a little under the weather. I think he had too much thankfulness and fun during the Thanksgiving holiday. So I will be leading off our reviews this week. But we have a couple of announcements first. In addition to wishing Mr. Movie to get better soon, we're asking all of our listeners to add Brzezinski the Movie to their queues on Netflix. As you know, this film is an extremely limited release, and one of the best ways that you can help its cause and get out there and viewers or listeners to view it is to put it on your queue so Netflix will pick it up. They say if enough people put on their queues, they will pick it up as a rental. And also, if you remember a few months ago, Mr. Movie and I reviewed Flip, and gave that a stellar review of it. I think we both gave it A's.
It was our first AA review.
First AA review. That's right. This is now on DVD, and I know it is on demand for those of you who have on demand, and I believe it's also available on Netflix in your local video store. So this is a great film to see, a great family film. It's one of those great family films that's has a little bit of something for everybody. So highly recommend it. If you've seen it before, revisit it. It's well worth it, I think.
I concur.
All right. So on to our reviews. And our first review this week is for The King's Speech, starring Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush.
I'm not here to discuss personal matters.
Well, why are you here then?
Because I bloody well stammer!
Do you know any jokes?
Timing isn't my strong suit.
War with Germany will come. And we will need a king whom we can all stand behind.
He's afraid of his own shadow.
The nation believes that when I speak, I speak for them. But I can't speak.
You could do it. You needn't be governed by fear.
It'd be like Mad King George the Stammer. Get up! You can't sit there! Get up!
Why not? It's a chair.
That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names.
Listen to me! Listen to me!
Why should I waste my time listening to you?
Because I have a voice!
Now, it's 1939. England is in crisis, war looms, the government is in chaos, and the king has abdicated. And everyone is looking to one man, a man who never wanted to be in the spotlight, to lead his nation out of this crisis and to better days. All he has to do is give a speech. But there's the rub. The new king of England, George VI, has a horrible stammer. He has to overcome this so he can give his speech and inspire the nation. So he turns to an Australian speech therapist who promises that he can help him do it. Now, Mr. Movie, if right now you forced me to pick the best film of the year, The King's Speech would win hands down for me. This is one of those magical sorts of films that works on every level. There isn't a misstep by any actor, particularly Colin Firth as George VI and Jeffrey Rush as speech therapist Lionel Logue. And these performances are underpinned by an inspiring, not sappy, story about friendship and triumph and how confidence in oneself is the root of self-esteem. Every scene is a gem that builds the relationship between therapist and patient into first a partnership and then a friendship. This could have been one of those films filled with bathos, you know, big speeches, telling glances, swelling music, ominous foreshadowing. Instead, it has the kind of quiet truth that only the best films are able to give us. Firth plays Prince Albert, later King George VI, as a strong but damaged man, angry that he has never measured up to his demanding father's expectations, mocked by his brother Edward VII, and pitied by everyone else. It would have been easy to play George VI as a weak man, but the brilliance of the script by David Seidler is that he portrays George as immensely strong, stubborn, loving, and yes, even funny. Lionel is the perfect foil and partner for the prince, later king, respectful of George's position, but determined to keep the relationship on an even footing. And in a sly, almost backhanded way, he gives George VI the confidence to make the film's climactic, inspiring speech. There are no easy answers, and the king has to rely on a variety of interesting and offbeat techniques to lessen his stammer. And it's fascinating how he uses the power of his own mind, guided by a seasoned professional, to achieve what so many of us take for granted. Now, the film covers several years of George's life and his relationship with Logue, starting in the mid-30s and ending on the right at the beginning of World War II, as he tries to overcome his crippling stammer, weathers the abuses of his family, and sees his brother throw away the crown for the love of Wallace Simpson, the twice-divorced American. Now, history and royal family buffs will eat this up, but it's not these big moments that show how good the film is. One of the most powerful scenes that occurs early in the film is when George VI, then Prince Albert, listens to a recording of his stammerless voice. The end of the scene is stunning in its quiet effect. And while George VI is surrounded by sorrow and personal tragedy, there are moments of sly and appropriate humor that break the tension. Just under 2 hours, the film from the Weinstein Company may seem a little slow to some, but I didn't look at my watch once. I've lost myself completely in the drama and the performances, and all of those performances are great. In addition to Firth and Rush, Helena Bonham Carter is George's queen. We knew her as the Queen Mum. Guy Pearce is Edward VII, Michael Gambon as George V, and Derek Jacobi as the Archbishop of Canterbury, and every other member of the cast are terrific. And even in the small, this is one of those kind of films, even those small performances, you know, those guys who have one or two lines, they're all terrific. Now, the film is rated R, but only because of language, which has been kind of a bit of a controversy with the release of the film. Firth, in one of the funniest scenes, has to let loose a torrent of therapeutic cussing that is hardly offensive and given the context, highly appropriate. This is a must-see for anybody looking for a good drama, and I'm giving this an A+. This is about as good as it gets.
Well, I'm pretty close with you on this, Mr. Film. I think I'm going to go with an A- because I did look at my watch, but only once.
Okay.
I mean, I did like this. It reminds me a lot of Frost Nixon from 2008, which I think was a better movie.
Okay.
But what I did like about both Frost Nixon and The King's Speech is that there's these two minds of brilliant, equal intellect battling one another in some sense. And in both movies, you have one character who's kind of an underdog or a nobody who's matched up against a president or a king. And I like that tension, and I like how they deal with each other. Those scenes are the best in the movie, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And there is a difference between Frost and Nixon, of course, and that is in this, and Jeffrey Rush is trying to help King George with his stammering problem. But the conflict is that in order to do that psychologically, he has to be on equal footing with his patient, which obviously is a problem because he's, you know, going to be the king someday. Given that he's royalty, it's pretty ballsy that Rush's Lionel steps up to the task, and he really is a heroic character in that sense. I did like it.
Yeah.
But the minus here and the A minus, I think, is because I wanted a little bit more of these minds at play with each other and the banter and intellectual battle that they were having with one another. I like that the best. The side story of the brother didn't totally work for me. And at times also, I thought Jeffrey Rush was a little too cavalier. I mean, I know he had to be that way in his private sessions with King George. Outside of those private sessions, I think a little contrast in this regard would have done the character a little bit better justice dramatically.
Yeah,
but I'm with you on that. I'm with you on this. This is a good movie, and you'll definitely want to check it out. And I admit I was a little under the weather when I saw it, which was yesterday. So I may take a second viewing before I decide where I'll put it in the top 10 list. But I think this is definitely worthy of the top 10 for the year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think you do need to give it another shot. And I did handle the historical, well-known historical aspects of the story with Edward VII and the abdication and such. I think that was handled pretty well. But I'm with you that those scenes with Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush together and those sessions, those are the best parts of the film. And I really enjoyed the whole picture. So A-, A+, A, however we feel about it, I think go see this film. This
yes,
is the
strong
film
recommend, definitely.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, on to other things. Love and Other Drugs, to be precise, is Love and Other Drugs.
Why would you want to be a pharmaceutical rep?
That pays over 100 grand a year, that's why.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gorgeous.
Strong eye contact, implied intimacy. You're good.
Are you always this mean?
Actually, this is me being nice.
You have beautiful eyes.
That's it? That's the best you got? This isn't about connection for you. This isn't even about sex for you. This is about finding an hour or two of relief from the pain of being you. And that's fine with me because all I want is the exact same thing.
Jake Gyllenhaal plays Jamie Randall, a natural-born salesman with an eye for the ladies. After getting fired from his latest job selling electronics for having inappropriate relations with the boss's girlfriend on the job, Jamie decides to try his hand at pharmaceutical sales. It's a natural fit. He comes from a family of doctors and medical professionals, so he knows the lingo and the psychology, can make a lot of money, and as a benefit, there are a lot of available women working in doctors' offices. So it's off to the Ohio River Valley and his new career. After several false starts peddling Zoloft, he meets Maggie, played by Anne Hathaway, a free spirit who has early onset Parkinson's disease. He soon realizes that she's his soulmate, wanting nothing more than a purely physical relationship, and inevitably falling head over heels in love in spite of himself. Mr. Movie, if there's ever been a film that's in need of serious psychological help, it's this R-rated picture from Fox. The film suffers from such a severe case of multiple personality disorder that it's hard to even really figure out what the heck it wants to be. Is it a rom-com? A satire about the medical industry? A slob comedy? A medical drama? A fugitive from the Hallmark Channel? Yes, 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 and a definite yes. There is so much going on here and so many extraneous scenes and plot lines. The biggest and most pointless involving Jamie's slob brother Josh, played to the hilt, unfortunately, by Josh Gad. It's hard to really even summarize the plot. As a matter of fact, I wanted to pop a Zoloft or two just to alleviate the anxiety of trying to keep up with all the dead-end shenanigans. The drug part of the film is okay, and it's sort of amusing to see how these hyper-aggressive alpha males and females vie for the attentions of their doctor clients and the lengths they'll go to get an advantage. Showering the staff gifts, stealing other reps' samples, sleeping with receptionists. But that's not what the film is really about. It's about love and how it can triumph in the face of a grim disease. Once Jamie meets Maggie and the hot sex gives way to a relationship, the film veers into love story, disease of the week territory. Maggie will never get better, no matter what Jamie does to help her, and he must accept that fact, etc., 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 ad nauseum. We've seen this all before, albeit told a little more coherently. It's the lack of focus that really makes the film suffer. Perhaps it needed a good dose of Ritalin to get it on track. Once one storyline gets going, it's dropped for something else, only for it to come back around to the earlier one with various loose ends that are tied up in ridiculously stupid ways. At the end, there's a pajama party that has to be seen to be believed. This is all really surprising, given that director Edward Zwick has a good track record of telling complex stories and infusing them with a good sense of pacing and emotion. He was definitely off his game here. Now, typically, I say that Love and Other Drugs is a big misfire, give it an F, and move on. But there's two reasons I can't. That's Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway. They're both really good here, particularly Hathaway, who displays a good, believable range of emotions. Fun and sexy, defiant and angry, depressed and self-pitying, but all in a way that is at once powerful and believable. Gyllenhaal is good too, playing Jamie first as a jerk, but he really isn't. And we see how he lets down his defenses a little at a time until he reveals that, yes, he is a good guy and a romantic, in fact. The fact that the two leads have great chemistry, you believe all the scenes between them, doesn't hurt either. If the film had just been about them and had jettisoned all the other junk, the slob brother, the drug rep hijinks, the terminal disease, and had just focused on this relationship, this would have redeemed rom-coms in my mind. No more zombies. We could have gone back to enjoying rom-coms. Instead, we have a mess that runs an hour and 53 minutes, but it's sort of a worthwhile mess at its core. And I'm going to surprise you, Mr. Movie. I'm going to give this a B-, and just because of Gyllenhaal and Hathaway's performances.
I think that's fair enough. I mean, you're really spot on here. I can't disagree much with what you're saying, except maybe the acting. You know, it's just okay, I think. I mean, it's not bad. It's good, but it's not great. It's not okay. Great. I think that Hathaway feels a little forced at times in her performance.
Okay.
You know, Gyllenhaal, or I thought it was pronounced Gyllenhaal, but...
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
However.
You know, he's good, but I think that's due to a strong script. I mean, you know, he's not bad. But I think there's an interesting paradox in their relationship, which is the part about the movie that I like, and that's that Gyllenhaal is portrayed as a shallow and only wanting this meaningless sex character, and Hathaway, who's struck by this disease, thinks that a short-term romp is really her only relationship option. So naturally, they're kind of attracted to each other. Yet in that act, he feels like he's really being seen and recognized for who he is. And as a result, they kind of fall in love and they get each other because of that, because they're really in the same boat. I mean, she in the physical sense and he in the psychological sense.
Yeah.
But in making that connection and bond, they kind of overcome it, which is an interesting paradox. And they form this, you know, deep, meaningful bond. So
yeah.
I like that aspect of the movie. There's other aspects of this, like the brother you didn't like. I didn't like him either, but he does illustrate that theme at a certain point in the movie about this idea of meaningless sex. So it's not all for naught.
I thought that was a little lame, but
yeah, it was. But you know, it did go to the point of the movie, but that's the problem. It didn't totally work, and I think that's the problem with the whole movie here. Is like, I like the idea of the movie, and what it's trying to say, but in the end, the movie doesn't quite measure up to that. It's like, okay, I get what you're trying to say. I like it. I can kind of like remember it and project, you know, my own sort of idea of what the movie was, but if you go back and watch it again, that's not what the movie was. So I'm going to go with a B on this one. I think, you know, B minus is fair too, I think. So now, one other thing about this, if we want to talk about an off-label prescription for this movie, is that, you know, the movie should have been titled Love, Other Drugs, and Anne Hathaway is Naked. Because she's naked in this picture a lot. And it almost feels like she was asking if she could be naked in certain scenes, you know? It's just like, oh, can I take my clothes off here? You know, it almost seemed a little bit unnecessary. So, not that I object to that, but I'm sure that Mr. Skin will be pleased if you... And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't ask. But so,
yeah. And I was actually very surprised about that as well. So, you know, but you know, there is some talk, some buzz for her for an Oscar. So maybe that's part of her strategy as well. I don't know.
It does. It feels like she's trying really hard for an Oscar. And you know, that's why she takes her clothes off and has a disease. Like, all right, come on.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, she's kind of hit every, you know, it's kind of a shotgun approach to the the thing. Look, I have a disease. Disrobed and I acted fairly well and had some emotional range. So, good for her. All right. Well, that does it for our reviews this week. To recap, I gave The King's Speech an A+. Mr. Movie gave it an A-. And I gave Love and Other Drugs a B-. And Mr. Movie gave it a B. Now, our next show, we'll be reviewing Black Swan with Natalie Portman, I Love You, Philip Morris with Jim Carrey and Ewan McGregor, and All Good Things, a real-life crime drama with Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst. Please visit our website, www.moviefilmshow.com. And if you have any comments, suggestions, feel free to email us at mail@moviefilmshow.com. And of course, as always, subscribe to us on iTunes. It's free, and all you have to do is push the iTunes button on the website to subscribe. So that'll do it for this show. I'll see you next show, Mr. Movie. Feel better.
Thank you, Mr. Film. I'll see you next show. Thanks for filling in for both of us.
Of course.
All right.
All right.
I survived.
You survived.
The movie should have been titled Love, Other Drugs, and Anne Hathaway is Naked.
This is one of those magical sorts of films that works on every level.
Sure that Mr. Skin will be pleased if you... And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't ask. But... so...
yeah. Perhaps it needed a good dose of Ritalin. It's the lack of focus that really makes the film suffer. everyone is looking to one man.
Oh, can I take my clothes off here? Can I take my clothes off here?
The fact that the two leads have great chemistry, you believe all the scenes between them, doesn't hurt either.
Can I take my clothes off here?
At the end, there's a pajama party that has to be seen to be believed. War looms, the government is in chaos.
Can I take my clothes off here?